Welcome to Your Family Dog, a podcast dedicated to helping families love living with dogs. Here are your hosts, Julie Fudge-Smith and Colleen Pilar.
Hi, welcome to Your Family Dog. I'm Julie Fudge-Smith, and I'm here with Colleen Pilar. And we have a special guest today, Laura Summers. She's not our typical dog expert in that she doesn't have a degree in anything dog, but she is a very experienced pet owner. She and her husband, Scott, have owned 8 large dogs, all over 100 pounds. They've had single dogs, they've had multiple dogs, they've had special need dogs. And so what we wanted to talk with her today was a pet owner's view of special needs dogs, and how do you cope with that, and what kind of surprises does that bring into your life? Now, Laura's been a client and a friend of mine for many years. She's also a terrific writer, and she did some writing about Neo, her real special needs dog, shortly after he died. And we'd like to start with some of the stuff that she wrote about Neo as an introduction to special needs dogs. So thank you, Laura, and there you go.
Yes. All right, then. Well, he was the neediest dog we've ever had. He was the sweetest dog we've ever had. He made no secrets of his anxieties and quirks. For one so timid and unsure, he lived large. He was large. But he was also only mostly destructive in small ways, or self-destructive. So it was easy to clean up, move on, forgive, and worry about him. It wasn't separation anxiety, because he was always a little separate from us anyway, from whatever was going on, from strangers. He kept himself apart to protect himself. He approached things sideways in his own way. He did it his way. And we didn't realize until he was gone what a character he was, how much he filled our house with his presence. He was 80% of the dog activity, 80% of the comedy, 80% of the dog stress. He was a drama queen with a devoted audience, and he had us trained.
I think that's such a beautiful summary of a dog's life, and particularly a special needs dog, because you encapsulated all of the challenges of living with a dog who has these concerns, and your love for him really shows through. So thank you for sharing that, Laura.
You're welcome.
Yeah, that really was lovely.
The question I'd like to start with is, one of the things you said in there is you didn't realize until after he was gone some of these effects. And I think that happens a lot with any sort of special needs dogs, whether it's fear or aggressive behavior or just, you know, any forms of anxiety, that we don't realize how much we tailor our lives to our dog's needs until we're no longer doing that. Can you tell us a little bit about that and how that played out in your life?
Yes, he took about a year to housebreak, which is pretty unusual. And Julie definitely helped me with some of that. And we went through all of the things that you find online that you should try. And very few of them worked. But finally, we got him so that he could at least signal to us when he needed to go outside. And if you didn't act on it quickly, he would just sort of check out and go wherever he was standing. So that sort of persisted throughout his life. So as I said, he had us trained, and you get a little shocky with that kind of behavior, especially when it's a Great Dane.
It's a big puddle.
Not a puddle. So whenever he signaled, we had to go. So sometimes I would be in the middle of a call for work because we work from home, or I would be fixing dinner. You know, finally, workday has ended. I'm finally getting to fix dinner. And once I fix dinner, I get to sit down and relax. And so just when I turn the stove on and get something cooking, he's standing there doing his little tap dance. And I have to take him out. There's just no question about it. So behaviors like that really take their toll on you. You get a little shocky and a little crazy from it. And you even may start to fight over who has to handle the dog at that moment. So that was one thing. He also had a really strange habit, and this was clearly one of his anxieties sort of coming to the fore. We called it canvassing because with the large dogs, we keep painter's drop cloths on a lot of our furniture to protect the slip cover, which protects the actual upholstery, which of course only partially works, but you know, in good faith, we keep the canvas on. And he would, something would be bothering him, and he would start rubbing his nose on the canvas. And if he didn't stop him, he would rub it until the top of his nose bled. And so that was another, just like I said, he was mostly self-destructive. He didn't actually harm much of our furniture or walls or floors or anything, except if you count the pee. But yeah, the canvassing was a really strange thing that we just had to observe and try to figure out, and then try to figure out what we could do to ease whatever was happening with him at that time. So he had, Julie used to kind of make fun of me because I would say he was our little autistic dog. And she would say, there's no such thing as autism for dogs. I say, yes, but if there was.
I'm not convinced there's no such thing. So we can argue that one.
Honestly, I don't even remember saying that, but I'm not saying Laura's a liar. I just don't remember actually saying that. I do remember his canvassing, though. And when I was pet sitting for Laura, the canvassing was never the first day. It was usually, if he was going to start doing it, it was the second or third day. And I would come in, and I remember the first time, I'm like, what the heck is all this? And it wasn't a lot of blood, but it was like spots of blood on, and not knowing what was going on. But yeah. Laura's right. It never seeped through to the fabric or anything, but it was unnerving the first time you saw it because you couldn't figure out exactly where it came from.
Yes, and I would walk into my closet, you know, a walk-in closet, and find anything that was on the floor pushed into the corners. And so clearly he had been doing something similar in that space as well. So there were just all these sort of odd, kooky little behaviors that you couldn't quite explain or get him to change.
Tell us a little bit about his background. Where'd you get him, and what was his story before he came to you?
Right. Neo was a puppy mill dog, and he had been rescued from an Amish puppy mill by a woman down in Southeast Ohio who recognizes what's going on there and helps out where she can to just basically get dogs out of there and into real homes. And when we went to see him, we knew his situation. We knew he had been in a puppy mill. We had never dealt with a puppy mill dog before, but we had had a lot of rescues. So he came scooting out of her house, down some steps off a porch, and tumbled onto the grass lawn. He was soaking wet, and he just immediately sort of hit the dirt, like all four legs kind of splayed out around him, and then looked up with the sweetest eyes. And she told us she had given him a bath to make him presentable. And, of course, that was our first clue about the housebreaking. But, of course, we didn't recognize it. And he would barely stand up. He had spent so much time in a kennel that wasn't large enough for him and spent so much time just being startled and, you know, not really having the kind of socialization that we would expect a dog to have. She said whenever they came into this room that was full of kennels, they would just, you know, bang on a kennel to make noise to get all the dogs to quiet down. So that was his exposure basically to people. And she said that at 4 months old, she thought that he would have a pretty good chance of getting normal. And the fact that we had other dogs to kind of dogify him would also work to his benefit. So she, you know, she clearly had seen other dogs pull out of this situation and kind of come around. So we had some faith in that. We had a lot of faith in ourselves, you know, probably a little too cocky, but he was irresistible too. So there you have it.
the thing about Neo, though, is that I think that his early situation was so deprived of any kind of positive interaction with people, any kind of mental stimulation, any kind of just normalcy, and being the sensitive individual that he is. I think one of the things for Neo is that it was nearly impossible, and he never did become, quote-unquote, a normal dog. Neo had challenges his whole life. And I remember when he came to, we wanted to try and get him exposed to a few more dogs, a little bit more experience. So he came to our beginning class. And the way where I was teaching then, it was actually quite valuable. There was a little room that had French doors, and that became Neo's room. And we started out with the French doors just barely open. And Neo would go in and he'd pace, or maybe, if we were lucky, lay down. Didn't take treats the first couple of classes, really. But our goal was for Neo to be able to come in, take treats, participate to whatever degree he could, and exit. And so for the 6 weeks of class, we gradually did things like we opened one French door. And then we were really excited when we got both French doors open. And then Neo would like maybe lean out and take a peek. And then he'd go back in again. And he started taking treats. And it was on the very last class. And everybody in class was really terrific. They all understood who Neo was and what he was trying to do. So whenever we play games, we'd have two different teams plus Neo. And Neo would earn his own points. And the very last class, I think it was, we were playing My Dog Can Do This. And the card was to get your dog to sit. And Neo not only wandered out of his room, but he looked around, and Laura just said very softly, "Can you sit, Neo?" And it was like backing the bus up. He just backed up, and he went into a sit, and we all just froze because we all wanted to, like, applaud, but we knew that would scare the bejeebers out of him.
But yeah, I think with the training, and Julie was wonderful. She was really my first full experience of positive reinforcement training. And, you know, we had done sort of the classic more negative reinforcement approach before him. And it had worked okay because we had dogs with very even temperaments. And generally, we would eventually sort of slip anyway and, you know, be doing basically whatever the dog wanted us to do. So it all worked. That style of training was clearly not going to work with him at all. And we had attempted one traditional class with the choke chain and the, you know, walking around in the circle trying to heel. And I remember we were outdoors and he would just either freeze and stare off into the distance, which was another one of his big tricks, or I would just have to pull him off so he could go take a runny poop and shiver. So that didn't go very well. The positive reinforcement was far better. And, you know, for your listeners, I just want to say it was a classic case of, but my dog does it at home. every trainer has heard, you know, he actually was learning at home, which was very encouraging. And I had a couple of conversations with Julie where I realized, you know, the point of class is not to have a lesson. You know, I can pay attention and see what I'm supposed to be teaching him. But, you know, for him, the whole point of class was just the socialization and getting him to bond with me and connect with me through being in that little room together and through me giving him treats and hitting the clicker, you know, much more than, you know, anything about sit or heel or stay or roll over or whatever. It was all right about socialization.
We have to have individual goals for individual dogs, and certainly Neo's goals were a little different.
Yes, exactly. But he did, you know, at home, he sat pretty well. You know, it wasn't easy for him just because of his size and shape. Yes. He's kind of on stilts, but he sat as well as any Dane we've had, and he would come to his name, and he was really good at, if you told him to get up on the couch with you, he could do that. So that was good.
You mentioned the bath being a clue that you didn't recognize at the time. were there any other things that were said to you or experiences that in looking back, you can think, oh, someone probably was trying to tell me this might be a bigger issue than I understand it to be?
That's an interesting question. I'm trying to think if there was anything. I think the way that he would freeze up and hit the dirt, you know, we had known puppies in the past, and sometimes they are kind of timid and will tend to freeze up a little bit around you. But that really was his MO for a lot of situations. And I don't think we knew that really that behavior sort of carried all the way through his life. If he was unsure or anxious or afraid, he would just freeze. And I remember a couple of times having him on a walk in town. And again, with Neo, you never quite knew what the trigger was necessarily, but he would just freeze up and not walk anymore. He would just stand there in the middle of the sidewalk, you know, with his legs kind of at that trapezoidal angle that they do. And no amount of cajoling or tugging or treats or I'm leaving you now or anything would work. In fact, the follow me and leaving some distance between you was probably the best approach with him sometimes, because you, you know, you sort of worked with that fear a little bit. But yeah, he would freeze up. That was definitely one of his preferred responses.
So you mentioned something about, I think in your writing, about that it could cause some conflict between the two of you. Did you find that having a special needs dog was a challenge, not just with managing him, but did it have an effect on your relationship with your husband?
Absolutely. And we're together, we're fine. But but I will say that, you know, as a result of Neo, we pretty much always had three dogs. We started out with one, we added a second, and then the second dog needed a pet, so we got a third, and then we were always filling out that complement of three. And after Neo, I said to my husband, I really need a break from this. And we are down to two, which is actually pretty radical for us. And I've had to sort of take a hard line, which hasn't been very popular. But he took a lot out of me. And I'm not going to say it was traumatic, but there was just that, probably like having a newborn. You know, I don't have kids. But, you know, just that feeling of I am not in control of my schedule or my life. And working from home was part of it as well. So that when Neo needed something, you had to react. So there was conflict. Sometimes one of us wanted to be out of the house. And so that meant the other one was going to be dealing with Neo for 4 hours by on their own. Sometimes there were issues, you know, or discussions about what would be the best course of action, especially when we were dealing with the house training, because one of the problems that we had was that we were trying to kennel him, and that had always worked for other dogs and had actually yielded a very quick result for us. Well, this little guy soiled his kennel and almost seemed as if he thought he was supposed to go in the kennel, which if you think about his first 4 months of life, that's what he was trained mm-hmm. to do. So after a long time of being very frustrated with this situation, and then also having him doing the canvassing on all of his bedding and messing things up that way and potentially hurting himself by chewing on bedding and things like that, we realized that he might really, really, really appreciate the, you know, a spotless kennel. So we didn't keep him in there very long. And if he made a mess in there, we would immediately clean it up and get fresh bedding in there and make it a really happy place for him and use really good treats with it. But so you can see how that kind of a situation would create conflict with a couple where you're just trying to figure out what is the best approach. You're not doing it the way I'm doing it. You know, and then if one of you messes up, then, you know, it's an opportunity to play gotcha. So mm-hmm. yeah, a lot of that, I mean, a lot of that is just typical dog care stuff too. But it's definitely magnified with this type of dog and especially such a large dog.
Well, and when you said one of us leaving for 4 hours, so it's not like one of us leaving for 4 days and I have to watch the dog. It's, you have an afternoon appointment and you're going to be gone for 4 hours and it's just me. That's a whole different level of animal care there.
Yeah. And it goes to show just how much, especially in the beginning, that he needed to be managed so carefully. So if you're talking 4 hours is a trying time to be left alone with a dog, you're talking about a dog that has truly almost severe special needs to begin with.
Yes. And, you know, when things sort of stabilized for us, I would say we could be gone 4 or 5 hours and that was it. And if we were coming home in, because we are in business together, and so we would have to go to meetings together. If we were coming back at the fifth hour, we were nervous, you know, about what we might find in the house.
And how old was Neo at the time that he died?
Neo was 9 years old.
So that is many, many years of that level of care.
Yes. Yes. And we were lucky to have some very understanding dog sitters. We've always had dog sitters stay in our house with the dogs. We actually, it's so funny, we looked into boarding when we took a long trip to Italy, and our dog sitter fell through about 5 years ago. And we were very concerned about boarding him. And it worked out that we didn't have to. But what was funny was we visited a number of the kennels in the area. And they would have been able to put the dogs together, or at least two of them in a run together, because we were like, no way this dog can be alone. But they didn't even have an opening tall enough for him to walk through without scooching down on his knees. And it was just, you know, the decision was made for us, and fortunately it worked out. But, you know, those are some of the kinds of things that you may not really think through when you're taking on this kind of a project.
Yes. Yeah. Having someone able to take care of your pet when you're not able to do it yourself, whether that's an afternoon dog walk because you have a long meeting, or it's a trip to Italy and we're talking about days or even weeks, it's amazing how I guess a lot of people aren't as concerned about it as I, but I wish they were, because it's a hard thing. And, you know, I currently have an older dog who has some special needs, and he has a neck injury. And, oh, gosh, it's like, you know, you have to pry me out of the house if I don't know exactly who can take care of him, because because you worry about it. And so that is a very difficult thing. And my favorite class to teach, of course, is the relaxing rowdy rovers, which is the reactive dogs. Mm-hmm. And most of those dogs don't like a stranger. So if they didn't have a good dog walker when they were young, sometimes they're not too excited to meet the new person who you think would be great. And that could be an awesome, wonderful, dog-loving person, but doesn't mean your dog's going to like him.
Right. Right.
Right. We, fortunately, he was a very sweet dog and a very endearing dog. So the dog sitters who did work with him and got to know him really enjoyed spending time with him, even though he was a lot of work. But the concept, I've heard people do this where they actually take turns watching each other's dogs. That's really never been an option for us, even before Neo, because of the size of our dogs and the people who don't have large dogs, there are things they just don't understand that they should.
Yes. Like how very large dogs.
Yeah, how strongly they can pull, or how much water they drink in a day. That was another thing with Neo. I've heard people talk about dry mouth Danes. Apparently, some people breed Great Danes so that they don't slobber. And I've never checked to see if this is actually a thing, but I think it probably is because it sounds really screwy. So we think he was probably bred to be a dry mouth Dane. And what that seemed to mean was that he was almost insatiable for water. So in addition to having the housebreaking problem, we also had a dog who was drinking water constantly. it was just always this balancing act with him, trying to, you know, figure out what's his latest quirk and how do we make that fit with everything else and how do we create a routine around it. So we were pulling up water dishes and, you know, closely monitoring how much he had drunk so that we would know within the hour he's going to need to go out, whether he knows it or not, and things like that. So
yeah, and then I imagine at first when you have a dog that drinks that much water, so now you're thinking, are we talking diabetes? Are we talking a dog that has special needs, health needs, in addition to all these special behavioral needs? So it's just sort of one layer after another. but it's funny because somebody once said to me, don't you love your most difficult child the most? And I said, you know, kinda. I'm just not going to tell you which one's the more difficult child.
Yeah.
I think sometimes when we have a dog that requires that much from us, depending on the stage of life that we're in, if we can manage it, oftentimes that dog does become very close to our hearts, because perhaps we all maybe want something to need us that much. And to have a dog that you can take care of in that way is both exhausting and exhilarating. And So I sometimes think that where we may not want to repeat it, I think we're always sort of grateful for the opportunity to love and be loved in that way.
Yeah. I don't know if this is the right time for it, but I have another thing that I wrote that really sort of talks about that, kind of the lasting impact that mm-hmm. I felt like he had on me. He contracted Wobbler's disease, or ended up with Wobbler's disease, which is a very unfortunate condition, and very hard to explain to him why his body wasn't working the way it should. And you can imagine, of course, taking care of a dog who's having physical problems, you know, along with the usual mental and emotional. it just really intensified the situation. But as he was suffering through this, I wrote some things and said, his spirit has crept into mine. He has made me more patient and more compassionate and more tolerant. He has other ways, and I see the merit in them. He doesn't conform. He makes you have to rewrite the rule book. You have to be 100% kind and 100% attentive to this dog, because otherwise he just shuts down on you and you get nothing. So I think I've learned more about kindness and about not tempering it with sarcasm or judgment. He makes me be pure of heart, which makes me vulnerable.
Okay, so now I'm going to start crying.
I'm sorry.
That's right. That's Colleen. It's very easy to make me weepy on this program.
Both of us, actually.
Yes. We just cry all the way through the program. Surprising we have any followers. That was beautiful, Laura. Really beautiful. And it really goes to perhaps, I mean, we have dogs for lots of reasons, but maybe that really goes to the underlying reason why people say, you know, dogs make us better people. Mm-hmm. Because they force us to confront our humanity in a way that, you're right, that we can't use sarcasm. We have to use kindness. And so... Mm-hmm. What a wonderful tribute to him, and what a wonderful tribute to you as a dog owner, of understanding what it is you need to do, what it takes to really be successful with a dog with special needs. And certainly he was so lucky to have you and Scott. There's no doubt in my mind about that.
Well, thank you.
So, Colleen, do you have anything else you'd like to ask Laura at this point?
I think the question that keeps rolling through my head is, how do you think those of us in the dog community could do a better job supporting families who have really challenging dogs, so that they have the support and also the advanced knowledge when it's available to know whether or not this dog is the right fit for them?
Mm. That's a great question, Colleen.
That really is. I think we got very lucky to find Julie. She actually came to us first as a dog sitter, and so she became familiar with Neo and his environment and some of the issues we were having with him. And then we got him into the training, and fortunately it was positive reinforcement training, which I'm now a huge advocate of. So I think that's one thing is to just keep telling that story about positive reinforcement, and especially for dogs with special needs and emotional issues, how important it is to not negatively reinforce that dog and reinforce that fear. the dog community. We've always thought about, could we foster dogs? And usually the answer comes back no. And I think part of it is because of the unpredictability of it, and then the difficulty of separating, you know, once you do sort of bond with that dog. Mm-hmm. So I think people need to know that if you're going to take on a foster dog, a rescue dog, a puppy mill dog, even a family dog that someone else realizes they can't handle, that you really need to go into it with your eyes open, even if you're an experienced dog owner, as we were, and just sort of telling that story about temperament testing, understanding differences between breeds, understanding early socialization, which I didn't really fully comprehend until we had Neo and had problems with it. And, you know, we also had to deal with multi-dog household issues as well, having two other rescues and this very special guy, and wanting them all to be at peace with each other. So
it's not just that a little love will do it.
That's like the baseline. That's like the price of entry.
Yeah.
that's your table stakes. And then because you love them, then whether you like it or not, you're going to learn about training. You're going to learn about housebreaking. You're going to be on the internet at 10 o'clock at night going, will a belly band work or not?
Mm-hmm.
You're going to be calling other people who have dogs. You know, you're going to be talking to people like Julie and continuing to talk and spending money on it and talking to the vet about it and and writing about it. So yeah, without the love, you're not going to get there. But the love is just sort of the kickstart for it all.
Thank you
so much for sharing your experiences with us, because I think it's a piece that's hard for people to talk about sometimes because they do love their dogs. So they don't want to say, oh my gosh, living with that dog was super hard. But it was super hard. You did it because you loved him and there were many benefits, as you so beautifully expressed in the beginning. But that doesn't change that it was challenging. And mm-hmm. Thank you for sharing that.
Yes, thank you very much.
You're welcome. We miss him to this day. He was a solid black dog, and Julie and I have talked about this. With when an animal is solid black, you see them when they're gone everywhere. You see them in shadows. You see them in a shape, and we still see him in the house and miss him, and miss his comedy and his spirit very much.
All right. Well, thank you, and I know that Neo was, as I said, was very lucky to have you too. So. Thanks for joining us.
You're welcome.
Thanks for listening to Your Family Dog. Got questions? Interesting ideas? Colleen and Julie would love to hear them. Call 614-349-1661 or visit www.yourfamilydogpodcast.com to share your thoughts.